Good morning, everyone. Today, we're going to call a meeting of the Carson City Board of Supervisors and the Carson City Liquor and Entertainment Board to order. Today is Thursday, July 2nd, 2015. Happy 4th of July to everyone coming up. It is just 8:30 a.m. We're in the Community Center at Sierra Room at 851 East William Street in our very own Carson City. For the record, can we have a roll call, Kathy? Go ahead and do it.
Good morning. Supervisor Abel?
Here.
Supervisor Bonkowski?
Here.
Supervisor Bagwell?
Here.
Supervisor Shirk?
Here.
Mayor Kroll?
Here.
A quorum is present.
Thank you, Kathy. Can we call on our good friend, the Rock and Rev, Ken Haskins of the First Christian Church to get us started? Okay, we're now going to move on to item number 5, public comment.
Good morning.
Good morning,
Mr. Mayor, members of the board. It's my pleasure to introduce Courtney Warner. Courtney is the new executive director of the Carson City Senior Center. Courtney actually just moved down from the Seattle, Washington area. We're very happy to have Courtney aboard.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, Courtney?
Sure. So,
and if you tell us you're going to give us all Meals on Wheels, no.
No, I don't think we'll do that. There are some qualifications that I'm learning about.
All right. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
But you're all welcome to come to the Senior Center, and I look forward to that.
Okay.
So a little bit about myself. I'm from Seattle, Washington. I'm not born and raised there, but I was there for about the past 7 years. For the past 7 years, I've been running senior programs in the residential environment, and my past 3 years, I've been running all of the senior programs for our residents of independent living, so from the broad spectrum of transportation, lifestyle, fitness, all the way to social services, and so I'm delighted to be a part of the tradition of the Senior Center. It's been amazing how welcoming and hospitable everybody's been in the past 3 days since I've been here, and look forward to bringing some innovation and new ideas to the Senior Center while building on the tradition that's already established. It's really refreshing to be told by the seniors that participate that they're very proud of their Senior Center, and we want to build upon that. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm getting settled in. My family will join me in about 2 more weeks. I've got 2 little boys and a husband that we're excited to get a part of the Carson City community. That's one reason that drew me here. So I look forward to it and look forward to seeing all of you at the Senior Center. Thank you.
Anybody want questions of Courtney? Anything?
Anything?
Well, Courtney, welcome aboard. You certainly speak well.
Thank you.
I'm sure we'll all come out and say hello to you and say hello to the seniors out there at the Senior Center. So welcome aboard again.
Thank you very
much.
Thank
you. Okay.
Thank you.
All right. Do we have other public comment this morning? I don't see any on this item at the beginning of the meeting. Let's go on to the minutes, item 6, the minutes of May 21st. Everybody had a chance to look at those minutes? If we have motions in order.
I move to approve the minutes of May 21st, 2015 as presented.
Motion and second on the motion, discussion. Hearing none and seeing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay, carried unanimous. Okay, on 7, agenda, any changes to the agenda?
No change, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, board members? Don't see any. Okay, then unless there's an objection, we will take the agenda as published. Any special presentations this morning?
None.
Okay. With that in mind, then we'll temporarily recess as the Board of Supervisors. We will reconvene as the Liquor and Entertainment Board, and The record will reflect that all five supervisors are here, and the sheriff is here as well, Sheriff Furlong. Yeah, wait till we get to, do you want to do it now or you want to?
No, I'll wait till we
Okay, all right. We're on item number 11, public comment related to the Liquor and Entertainment Board. Anybody? I don't see any. Okay, then we'll move to item number 12, and I think there's a disclosures.
Yes, on item 12A, I need to disclose that I have a commitment in a private capacity to the interest of another person relating to Bruce Robertson, who represents the applicant. Let's see, per NRS 281A.420, subsection 4B, I am allowed to vote and participate on this matter because the commission must give appropriate weight and proper deference to the public policy of this state, which favors the right of a public officer to perform the duties for which the public officer was elected or appointed, and the voter otherwise act upon a matter, provided that the public officer has properly disclosed the public officer's acceptance of a gift or loan, significant pecuniary interest, or commitment in a private capacity to the interests of another person in the matter required by subsection 1. Because abstention by a public officer disrupts the normal course of representative government and deprives the public and the public officer's constituents of a voice in governmental affairs, the provisions of this section are intended to require abstention only in clear cases where the independence of judgment of a reasonable person in the public officer's situation would be materially affected by the public officer's acceptance of a gift or loan or significant pecuniary interest or commitment in a private capacity to the interests of another person. So I will be participating and voting on this matter.
All right, let's take up the issue then. Lake Tahoe Brewing Company, who's going to start? Lena? All right.
This item is for possible action to approve Leah Mia as the liquor manager for Lake Tahoe Brewing Company, LLC. Liquor license number 16-30216, located at 302 North Carson Street. She is replacing the previous liquor manager, and staff is recommending approval.
Why don't you tell us a little bit about, go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Michael Candelari. I'm the majority shareholder for Lake Tahoe Brewing Company, and just wanted to share a few thoughts and statements prior to the discussion. Wanted to be the first to make it public that we're apologizing for this process. It's taken a long time, much longer than we intended for this to happen. By no means an excuse. I take full responsibility for those actions prior to us. And for other representatives that represent our company throughout this process. We thought we had a solution in place with our general manager that unfortunately took a long time. A few things came to our attention. We felt uncomfortable moving forward with that. And so we stopped that process, which did elongate this whole process. I do also want to say that we have chosen Ms. Mejia for a few solid reasons that we believe are this is a solution that's going to be a long-term effect for us here. So we won't be back anytime soon, quite frankly. Ms. Mejia, her family has invested in our company, so she represents her family as an investor to this company. Just recently, she has become a liquor manager for us in Lyon County. When we decided that we were going to move forward with this process about 6 weeks ago, we have taken a lot of steps to make sure that not only are we taking this serious, but we have a process in place to address any future concerns. We have a liquor management program in place. Ms. Mejia has or is about to complete her instructor course with the Serve Safe program so that she will be an instructor and be able to teach these programs to individuals in our department or in our business. Lastly, Ms. Mejia packs a punch when it comes to enforcement for us. She's been with us since day one. I've seen her tell Oakland football players for the Oakland Raiders that enough is enough. I've seen her tell people coming in from the wine walk that were intoxicated that we're no longer going to serve them. I feel confident wholeheartedly that she'll carry out the wishes of this board and our program to the fullest extent.
Any questions of Michael?
Michael, I guess the only question, and maybe Ken, you can answer, and you alluded to it in your report that during the time there were complaints as to why they were able to operate without a liquor manager. Do you want to just address that, Michael?
Yeah, absolutely. We had a liquor manager in place who was going to be with us for a certain period of time. She opted to accept a job that was more along the lines of what she went to school for. We then had a general manager that went through this process. I take responsibility for this. Our attention was in a new facility. We thought this was being handled. I find out that it unfortunately was not as it was told to either myself or to the sheriff's department. When that came to our attention, we changed course and we went in a different direction. Unfortunately, it took longer than anticipated, and I apologize.
Mr. Mayor, if you don't mind.
Sure.
And for the record, on your background packet, background of the premises, it cites the general manager, and I've been informed that general manager is no longer employed there.
Yes, that's correct.
Other questions? Anybody? Michael Amaya, did I pronounce that correct?
I'm sorry, say again, Mr.
Michael and Leah, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Let me just say, you know, sometimes these things can be a liquor license, you know, they can be routine, come here, talk with people, and go on. But I'm here to tell you that even though it may appear that we do these routinely, we take them very seriously. And so seriously that we've had in the past times where we actually shut down a bar in the Nugget. We shut down alcohol sales in a convenience store, 7-Eleven. Very harmful and very hurtful, but necessary in order to affect our rules. So I want to leave you with that because, you know, it doesn't bode well. I mean, one, we like the business down there. I mean, you'd have done a nice job on the outside and things like that, but it doesn't bode well for either you or for the board or our community when, you know, when we're not paying attention to detail that we have here. Okay? All right. Anything else? Leah, you want to say anything? Want to come up and punch me now?
I'm Leah. I'm the acting liquor manager until I get approved. I'm also the general manager. Like he said, I've been with the company since before they opened. I'm fully confident that we'll be able to maintain and exceed your expectations in A, not serving to minors, and B, not overpouring. I'm very dedicated to this community. I've been here my whole entire life. So I guess I can just say that you can instill your confidence in me, and I promise to take care of it from there.
All right. Anything else? Motion's in order.
I move to approve Leah Mia as the liquor manager for Lake Tahoe Brewing Company, LLC, liquor license number 16-30216, located at 302 North Carson Street.
Motion and second on the motion. Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried unanimous. Thanks. Thank you for your statement, Michael. Okay. All right. Let's take up Blazin' Wings. Blazin' Wings. Come on up while we get it. Have a seat while we get it introduced here. This is an application to approve John Shiner as liquor manager for Blazin' Wings, DBA Buffalo Wild Wings. This is an acquisition, I think, isn't it also? Lena, is that what's going on here?
This item is for possible action to approve John Shiner as the liquor manager for Blazin' Wings Incorporated, doing business as Buffalo Wild Wings, liquor license number 16-30770. Located at 3815 South Carson Street. They are applying for a full liquor license. They have purchased the business from the previous owner, Screaming Hot Reno, LLC, and staff is recommending approval.
Okay. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Mr. Shiner, introduce yourself, and tell us a little bit about what's going on out there, what you plan to do, and just kind of take some time to promote your business and yourself, okay?
You're right, it is an acquisition. The company out of Minneapolis, Minnesota has purchased the franchise group. I am based out of California. I will be operating these two restaurants, one in Sparks, one in Carson City. For me, it's kind of like coming back to Carson City. I was with Brinker International earlier in my career when we put the first Chili's up here in Carson City. So it's nice to come back over the hill and spend some time over here. We intend to really not change much with regards to the business model, if you will. As far as alcohol goes, all the managers, team members that are serving alcohol will be required to be certified through ServSafe, and all are. We just got done running another class for those that were delinquent this last week. And I intend to be in contact with this restaurant virtually daily and spending time over the hill as much as possible, and perhaps in time talk my wife into moving to Carson City. But really excited. It's a vibrant community. We really want to do business here. We want to really expand our business and see what else we can do in this marketplace.
Very good. Thank you, John. Questions of the board? Motion's in order.
I move to approve John Shiner as the liquor manager for Blazing Wings, Inc., DBA Buffalo Wild Wings liquor license 16-30770, located at 3815 South Carson Street.
Motion and a second on the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried unanimous. Now you can blaze out of here on the wings of approval.
Thank you all so much. I
Thanks.
Appreciate
okay.
it.
Yeah. All right. All right, now we're on item 13, concluding public comment under the Liquor and Entertainment Board. Anybody? I don't see any. Are we ready to adjourn then as Liquor and Entertainment Board? Everybody? Unless there's an objection, we'll adjourn as the Liquor and Entertainment Board. We will reconvene as the Board of Supervisors. We'll take up item 16. I'm going to turn the gavel on item 16, which is dealing with the Carson City Airport Authority, over to the Mayor Pro Tem, Supervisor Abowd. My partner, Steve Takis, is counsel to the Airport Authority, and I don't believe it's proper for me to participate in this matter. So, Karen, let me give you that, and I'll just sit back here for a minute.
Good morning, Steve. Are you going to take us through what this issue is before us?
Yes, I am. Steve Takis on behalf of the Carson City Airport Authority. The short history of this item is back in 1981, Carson City operated the airport directly, and they executed leases with a variety of fixed-base operators. Fixed-based operators is the term that we give to people who operate aviation businesses on the airport. They do aircraft repair, they sell fuel, they store aircraft, they give flight lessons, things like that. And so in 1981, there was like a surge of activity on the Carson City Airport, and leases were given out. A few years later, three of the leases were transferred to an entity that operated them. I can't remember what the entity was. And that entity was also the owner of a large ranch in the Elko area. A guy comes in to buy the large ranch, doesn't even realize he's also buying these aviation activities. And so in the mid-80s, there was a gentleman who had bought the ranch and ended up with these aviation entities. He didn't really have much connection to aviation, but he was kind of an accidental owner. The more he learned about it, the more he liked it. And over the years, El Aero Services, which is the company that he set up to operate these aviation businesses, was truly one of the best airport tenants we've had. Always responsible, always there with the rent. When we had issues, they were always there to help us. A few years later, he sold the entire ranch, and he sold it to a gentleman who Wes Dixon, who was very much into aviation and continued that heritage. Well, Wes died last year, and Wes was fairly elderly, his wife elderly as well, and they decided that it was too difficult for them to continue, or too difficult for her to continue to operate the businesses. So the item that's in front of you right now is an assignment of the three leases that are being operated by El Aero Services. And fortunately, we have a business that is already operating on our airport, someone that's known to us and has been a good airport tenant, a gentleman named Michael Golden, who currently operates our self-surface fuel island through an entity, Mountain West, which is owned essentially by him and his parents. It's a family operation. And he's went to the Dixon family and said, look, I'm willing to take it over, lock, stock, and barrel, keep the employees, keep the whole thing moving seamlessly forward. And so that's the overall transaction that's happening. The only portion that you're being asked to approve is the assignment of the leases, because the law that created the Airport Authority, even though it created as a separate entity from the city, the law requires that the Board of Supervisors appoint the members of the Airport Authority and approve leases. And so you're being asked to do that latter function this morning. So there's three leases. El Aero Services operates their main operation on the north side of the field, where they have a repair facility, storage. They sell aviation charts. They also operate a helicopter charter business out of there, which is mostly chartered to government agencies for fire protection, things like that. They have a facility on the south side of the airport, which is also set up to be a full-service facility, although right now it's generally just used for aircraft storage. And then they have this third lease, which is the Porta Hangar lease, which was originally leased out as a place for cheap, relatively cheap, somewhat portable hangars, the low-end hangars on our airport. And they operate those three properties. And so you're being asked to approve the assignment of the three leases from El Aero Services to Mountain West. It's already been vetted by the Airport Authority. It received unanimous approval at the Airport Authority at their last meeting. And I'm available to answer any questions you may have.
I'll open it up to the board. Any questions? Is there any public comment on this item? Seeing none, I'll bring it back to the board.
I move to approve the assignment of the airport leases held by El Aero Services, Inc. to Mountain West CXP LLC as regards original leases recorded as book 313PP173-186 and document number 8597, a.k.a. the mobile lease, document number 6457, a.k.a. Arrowhead lease, and document number 420793, a.k.a. Porta Hangar lease, together with all amendments thereto.
Motion and a second. Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes unanimous. Thank you, Steve.
Thank you.
And I'll turn the gavel back to the mayor.
Thank you very much, Karen. Okay, let's take up item 17. This is the Emergency Management Performance Grant. Who's doing that, Tom? Good morning. How's the fire folks doing today? Good. Why don't you give us an
there.
Update on the Washington fire while you're at it here.
Yeah, I think the that rains has been very helpful. It helped them gain some foothold on that thing, so that. I think very fortunate. I think if you lived in Markleyville, you're very concerned about southern winds, and I think that got very close. I think between local resources and resources from the Great Basin, from all over the western states, they had hundreds of firefighters and vehicles on hold. Some of them are still remaining, but I think that was another well-placed strategic plan to stop that from going into town. I think those people feel very fortunate and very lucky, and I think we're very glad that those winds weren't stronger from the south. I think that would have been a very sad fire for those neighborhoods. So, very lucky.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for letting us get a little update there from you. Okay. On the grant, why don't you take us through what we're doing?
Yeah, I asked Stacy Belt to join me this morning because, one, we have Stacy because of this grant, and because of this grant, we have Stacy. So, we have the obligation to come to you and get approval for the grants each time. So that's basically what we're here today is to seek your approval to continue on with that grant. Obviously, it helps helps us keep Stacy around and some other admin support folks. And I probably couldn't say off the top of my head all of the things that she's accomplished with that grant. So I wanted to take a few moments to talk about what she has accomplished with that grant. She probably doesn't want to, but we're very fortunate to have her. And so I made her come with us today to give you a quick overview.
Okay, Stacy, got
all
the floor.
Right. For the record, Stacy Belt. Federal funds are given to the Nevada Division of Emergency Management, and those funds are then subgranted out to each of the counties in the state of Nevada. Carson City has received this grant for the last several years, and it does help us with supplies, equipment, and emergency management functions. It pays half of my salary. And half of admin support salary.
Supervisor Bagwell, go.
So just in general, I noticed on this grant that they're actually backdating this. And so my concern is timing. So we're going to actually be billing them for salaries and expenses that have already passed. And so I just want to clarify, this is a grant that has normally been in place, so we are not supplanting, because there's a clause in here that indicates that we can't supplant. So I want to make it clear on the record, we are not supplanting we're just going to back bill, and this has been one that we've had for umpteen years. Is that correct?
Absolutely correct.
Do you know why is it so late in them granting us this award?
I don't know why.
Okay, because I'm like, wow, they're way past the deadline.
They are. So okay. We prepared and applied for this grant last year in advance of the start date of October 1st. Mm-hmm. And we've been performing and turning in our reports to the Nevada State Division of Emergency Management performing these functions. It's the monies and the final approval by the federal government that was delayed by the state. The state received their final award and then turned this around within 2 weeks and had it to us.
So are we going to be able to bill all the back quarters at once, or are we going to have to bill one quarter, wait, bill quarter, wait? Are they going to let us catch it all up and get it in time for the fiscal year for us?
Yes.
They've assured us they're going to go ahead and pay us for all the quickly.
Yes.
Supervisor, it's my understanding that we'll be able to bill immediately for one quarter. We then have to allow that to be processed. We'll bill another quarter. So we'll catch up fairly quickly here.
And get it in time to close our books.
Before, yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Supervisor Bunkowski, then Supervisor Shirk.
Because we anticipated receiving these funds on time, it was built in, I assume it was built into the fire department budget. If we did not receive this grant, how would that have impacted the fire department budget? And what I'm leading to is maybe we need to look carefully at what happened this grant period in anticipation of what may happen next year and the possibility that we may not get the grant for whatever reason it is internally that they're having these issues. So how does it impact the fire department budget? And if we don't get the grant, is that are you going to have to come back and ask for contingency funds, or is there adequate funding in the budget to cover this if you don't get the grant?
I don't have the answer to those questions. I wish Chief Shrehans was here. Tom, are you able to?
Yeah, absolutely. It would have impacted the budget. And I think because we've, you know, dealt with this grant year after year after year, and we get that confidence from Nevada Division of Emergency Management. They said a done deal. Again, good business practice. We should always rely on that, but I think we have. But, yes, I agree that it would have impacted the budget, and we probably would have gone to Internal Finance Committee and asked to take that budget line item amount out of a different budget, probably the YLM budget, and cut that services probably at that YLM budget 2545.
So then I would just recommend that next year we kind of anticipate that in case we run into the same problem and for some reason they don't give us a grant. Let's not make an assumption that we're going to get it next year, just on the off chance that were to happen.
Okay, we agree.
I think Stacy would have had you in front of IFC pretty quick, but Supervisor Shirk, Jim, go. Sorry.
My questions were mostly on the matching fund from the city. I was going to ask Nick if he could elaborate on that, on my questions I submitted.
Good morning. For the record, Nick Provenanti, Finance Director. Yeah, basically we budget the matching funds, like Supervisor Bonkowski had stated, in the general fund in that division. So half of it's budgeted from the general fund, and then the other half basically is paid for by the grant for those departments.
Thank you.
Okay. Anything else from the board? Public comment? I don't see any. Motions in order. Supervisor Abad, go.
I move to accept from the Nevada Division of Emergency Management the Emergency Management Performance Grant in the amount of $72,274.
Motion and a second on the motion. Discussion? Seeing none or hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried, unanimous. Thanks, Stacy. Thanks, Tom. Okay. Now let's take up the Tiburon software license issue under item 18.
Yes, sir.
Tom, you're going to do this one. Okay. Go.
I noticed that this is the third time we've come here for adjustments.
We're going to ask
budget.
You about it, but that's okay. Right. I mean, yeah, Why don't you tell us why? Why, you know?
Well, what occurred is that when we moved ahead with the Tiburon project, we have in our vehicles currently MDCs, mobile data terminals, look like heavy-duty laptops, and they stay in the vehicle. And they worked fine. That technology still works. It would have worked. It's probably technology from the 90s. And we were been wanting to for at least 2 years now, wanting to go to iPads. We've been waiting and waiting and waiting. Most public service has been waiting for iPads for EMS, fire, and cops. And we were told, yes, great technology. You guys are on the right track. You'll be able to do your fire reporting. It'll be able to do CAD. You'll be able to do your EMS reports. You could do inventory. You could do supply inventory. You could take the laptop into the house, do your EMS reports at the patient side, actually take pictures of patients, send data to the hospital and doctors, a faster way to do billing. And we were on board. We said, we want them. Let's go. But we were hearing from Apple that not ready yet. And then it was about a month ago, maybe a little bit more, they finally just said they are approved, the technology is all set, you could now get with your vendors. They do have the ability now to have that data set work with your EMS reports and your fire reports, and now you're prepared to get stuff from a CAD system, which we were getting Tiburon and we were very excited about. So we didn't want to wait and say, let's just go with the mobile data terminals, knowing the iPads are available. But we waited all this time. We met with all the vendors. We're all ready to move ahead with the latest in technology. And we thought, now is our big chance. Let's get the server. Let's get the 11 licenses and the data set so that we can make all of these work in all the engines and in the ambulances and be the first, at least in our neighbors, be the first to be able to say, we are on iPad, CAD system, mobile data, fire, and EMS reporting. And so we didn't want to lose that opportunity, so we're coming to ask permission to take that out of that 911 surcharge fund to move ahead with that part of the project.
And the cost is $25,000, and then the surcharge fund has approximately, what, $55,000
in it? It has $55,855.
Okay. Board comments. Supervisor Gutkowski, go.
A couple of comments. Our first question. How long do you anticipate that the iPads will be usable from a technology standpoint before you would have to replace them with something newer?
That's an interesting question. I think we've had a couple that we've been playing with. I think they're not as rugged as what we have in the vehicle because they actually just stay there. They do come with a protective case. And I think each ambulance is going to have two, so both the medic and her partner are both going to be able to do reporting and data. It allows us to have more reports that could be done and redundancy should we drop one or break one. The difference is the mobile data terminals can be 25 to 3,000 or more if we lose one or break one. The iPads are about $1,000. So should we break one, lose one, it's an easy back in service, less money, certainly impact to us. And we think that going by the technology and what's out there, the iPads are going to be here to stay. And with the new touchscreens, I think we're hoping to go at least 10 years before we change that. And so the dollar versus the benefit, I think this is a very good step for us, the latest technology, not a very big expense as compared to other data terminals you can have, so I think it's a good win-win there.
Thank you. My next question is, look into your crystal ball and tell us if there's going to be any other requests or changes that you can see coming up. Anything else that may have been missed in this transition? I know that it's subjective, but what I'm looking for is, can you think of anything from a technology standpoint that may have been missed that may be coming up, just so that we're kind of prepared for it?
You know, I should say in a business world, it's kind of hard to say. I sure hope not. But I think we've made some great strides ahead of this technology. We've the chief and our staff, we put hotspots in all of the ambulances and engines so that we control the speed and the data from all of the vehicles. We have all the new radios, the new data. We have the new 911 Tiburon system. The new telephones, the new 12-lead EKG, we can send data right from the person's chest to, right to the iPad, right to the cloud, right to the hospital. All of the stuff's in place. We were missing this one last piece in that iPad, and to answer your question, I sure hope not. I think we've got all of the legwork done ahead of that. We were just waiting on this last piece. I'm hoping to tell you, I would like to tell you, no, sir, I think we're set. I hope I don't regret that, but I believe that. I believe that.
It's an honest answer, so we won't hold you to it. My last comment is for staff, and that is if we approve this item today, we're also approving an additional $2,780 in maintenance fees that go along with that. And I would just like, in the name of full disclosure, just like to make sure that we include items like that in the fiscal impact going forward. So we're not approving $25,000. We're actually approving $27,780. I'd just like to make sure that we get that into the record.
Good catch. Supervisor Shirk. Jim.
Well, that alluded to my earlier question. I asked staff is who was paying the maintenance fee. So that was the original question. And then there is no warranty on any of this. And is that a concern?
Mr. Wilkinson, good morning to you.
Good morning, sir. Good morning, board. John Wilkinson, IT director. The warranty for this is covered in what is the master service contract. It's a document that's dated September 7th, 2000. It should be in your packet. Actually, it's about a 70-page item you received. This is on page 24. And it covers all the programs that we get from Tiburon. It basically says if we can show them a defect and it's reproducible, they'll fix it. That is actually kind of the master contract for everything we do with Tiburon. So that's the warranty.
So the answer is there is a warranty then, or is there not a warranty?
There is.
Okay.
All yes, right. Sir.
I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Sure. Go. Okay. All right. Supervisor Bagwell.
Just a and maybe we need John there. The additional $2,780 for the ongoing maintenance agreement on this, did we have an existing maintenance agreement on your old system? So is this almost a wash? You were just trading who we're paying maintenance dollars to?
No, ma'am. It's not a wash, but it's actually a pretty small increase. The annual Tiburon maintenance is around $160,000. And IT has traditionally paid that out of our software maintenance fund, which is about $400,000. Adding this $2,700, which I don't believe this $2,700 actually hits us until next budget year, but that's a pretty small impact.
We didn't have a maintenance agreement on the existing system that we're not going to utilize anymore?
We are still going to be using all of the stuff we had before. The fire department won't be using that, but the support for the MDTs will still be used by the SO. So we're not cutting back maintenance anywhere else. We're just adding to it a little.
Thank you.
Anybody else on the board? Public comment? Anybody? Don't see any. Somebody want to make a motion? Looks like Supervisor Abel.
I move to approve the Third Amendment to the software license agreement with Tiburon for interface services that will be used by a response agency, therefore not suitable for public bidding pursuant to NRS 332.1151 G and H for a cost of $20,727 plus the maintenance costs of $2,780 and a contingency amount of $4,270. $73 for a not to exceed total amount of $27,780 to be funded from the 2014 Tiburon project account in the 911 surcharge fund, file number 1415-035.
Second for discussion.
Second for discussion on the motion. Discussion.
Go. Yes, John, is the $2,780 is not coming from the 911 surcharge fund? Is that correct?
Correct, sir.
So we need to amend the.
I will amend that motion then, and we should just remove the $2,780 for the time being, since it doesn't come from the 911 surcharge fund.
All right. Does this second yes. agrees to the amendment of the motion to remove the $2,780 on the maintenance issue? Further discussion on the motion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried, unanimous. Okay, let's take up the financing, the refinancing bonds. Thanks, Tom. Thanks, Sherry.
Good morning, members of the board. For the record, Nick Providenti, Finance Director. With me, I have John Peterson from J&A Consulting and Ryan Henry from Bond Counsel. We've got four items today that we wanted to talk about. It's basically a resolution, and then there's three bond ordinances. So I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to John so he can kind of explain, you know, the first item, just the resolution. It's mainly procedural, I believe. So.
Thank you. For the record, John Peterson with J&A Consulting. J&A Consulting Group, excuse me. In front of you is a resolution, what we commonly refer to as a sale resolution. And essentially what this does is this authorizes the city to release an offering prospectus or a preliminary official statement related to the bond items that are next on the agenda. This has to be approved by the board before that prospectus can be released. In addition, this also authorizes the city to give notice to the bondholders for an outstanding 2005 drainage bond that we intend to redeem their bonds on August, or the date right now is August 3rd of 2015. That's a notice that needs to be given out to the market, and we're asking the board to authorize city staff to do that. This is purely a procedural step at this point. Really, the meat of what we're going to be proposing are in the upcoming bond ordinance items. But I'll pause there and see if there are any questions.
Anybody? Let me just ask. It might be premature, but when we do these, we're kind of putting them on the shelf to see what happens, I guess.
I think so. I mean, based on where the market is today, the transactions that we have in front of us, it would take a cataclysmic event in financial markets for these not to make any sense to execute.
Some of us would say that the recent drop in the stock market has been cataclysmic on our 401ks.
It has.
Okay. And the other question I have is, just as a general proposition, when we issue these refunding bonds, do we extend the term of the bond, or the underlying bonds?
We do not. In the instances here, we are not extending the term of any of the bonds to be refinanced.
Okay, very good. All right. Further board questions? Anybody? Public comment? Motion's in order.
Resolution. 2015-R28.
I move to adopt Resolution 2015-R28, a resolution pertaining to the issuance of refunding bonds by Carson City, Nevada, authorizing the finance director or his designee to arrange for the sale of refunding bonds for the purpose of defraying wholly or in part the cost of refunding outstanding bonds and providing other details in connection therewith.
Motion in a couple seconds on the motion. Discussion, hearing and seeing none. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried, unanimous. Okay. Let's take up the first one.
Thank you, Mayor. This is the item. These are Carson City General Obligation Capital Improvement Refunding Bonds, Series 2015C. Again, this is the item. I ask that, you know, when the motion is made, that we add that authorizing the issuance by the city in after the ordinance, after bill number and in the ordinance. So just a minor change. Again, we can have John talk a little bit about this. I think in the last four pages of the packet that I presented, we talk about the savings, and we're anticipating total savings of almost $1.3 million with a net present value of about $1.143 million. That's what we're anticipating savings, and we're anticipating most of the savings in the first 5 years. And this is all general fund savings because these are general fund bonds. I believe we used these bonds to finance the sheriff admin building back in 2005. So it's a significant savings, and it's general fund related. So, again, if there's any other questions, we can have John.
Let me ask a question before we go on. How many bonds are we refinancing with this one bond?
I believe so, right?
John Peterson with JNA Consulting. We're refinancing a portion of a Series 2005 bond. The approximate amount outstanding that we're going to refinance is $15,540,000.
So it's just one where we're going to replace and partially?
Correct.
Right? All right. All right. Thank you. Supervisor Budkowski.
And you included a letter in the package dated June 2nd. That talks about different methods of sale for the bonds. Could you kind of go through that letter and explain the pros and cons? Because one of the comments that is made in the letter is that what we're trying to do here is kind of a first. So can you explain to us basically the pros and cons of the method that we're going to use and why we're doing it?
Sure. John Peterson with J&A Consulting. Supervisor Bonkowski and members of the board, what we are proposing for the method of sale is for the city to negotiate the underwriting. The two general options are to negotiate an underwriting or to sell bonds via competitive sale. The key difference between those two, in a competitive sale, we set the day and time of the sale. It's essentially an auction. Whoever offers us the best interest rate is the winner of the bonds. They agree to purchase them. You know, we move forward and close on that transaction. In a negotiated bond sale, the key difference is that an underwriter through an RFP process is selected ahead of time. And so what this does is underwriters in that RFP respond based on the questions that we have and the goals of the transaction. Those RFP responses are evaluated and response that best meets the needs of the city is recommended to the board to be the underwriter. In the case here, we sent out an RFP to 13 underwriting firms who have a history of bidding on Carson City and other Nevada bonds. Of those 13 firms, we received 6 responses, and the 2 firms that we are recommending be part of the underwriting team are Piper Jaffray, as the senior manager or the lead underwriter, and Morgan Stanley as the co-manager. And so that team would be responsible for marketing the city's bonds. Under Nevada law, whenever we negotiate a sale of general obligation bonds, we have to provide this letter and also the letter that's been signed by Nick Morano explaining why we have selected that method of sale. The default in Nevada is for competitive sale. In the letter that Supervisor Bonkowski that you referenced, what we are looking at is there are some key features in these bonds that lend themselves better to negotiated sale. Because essentially what a negotiated sale allows us to do is to fine-tune the terms of the bonds to make sure that we have a ready group that is going to purchase the bonds, the underwriters, they know they're going to get them so they can go talk to the investors. I mean, the underwriters are middlemen. They're not buying these for themselves. They can talk to their investors and say, look, here's the deal. You know, how are you, you know, what do you need? What are you in or are you out? But I guess to your question about the pros and cons, the best advantage of a negotiated sale, again, is that additional control. Under a competitive sale, it's basically take it or leave it. We put out the bonds. We have no control over the structure that they propose when we offer those bonds for sale. And so sometimes it makes it very difficult to plan that bond sale in order to achieve the results that we need. So that control is very important. In addition, where we have what I like to call a story to tell or story bonds, it allows us to do that. Under a competitive sale, these underwriters, I mean, to give you an example or an idea of the municipal bond market, an average week in bond sales is anywhere between $7 and $11 billion a week in terms of bonds that are sold. We're talking about, you know, a grand total of, $21 million. So we're not really a huge drop in the bucket. And if we have a big story to tell, people may just pass by our bond sale. You know, it's to them not worth investing a lot of time to understand in order to potentially win, because, again, under a competitive sale, they're not guaranteed they'll get the bonds, to invest a lot of time only to lose out on the bidding process. So it gives us that control when we have a story. And for especially the Series C bonds this we're funding, we do have a story to tell. We are trying to allocate those savings in specific years, and there are specific criteria that we need to meet. I think the last kind of pro on utilizing a negotiated sale really is the timing. Under a competitive sale, we put out our offering prospectus, you know, just pick a date. We put it out tomorrow, July the 3rd, and we say we are going to take bids on July 20th or July 21st. That date's pretty much set in stone. You can change it if something happens, but it's incredibly difficult to do so. And so what we recommend with a negotiated sale is once we put our prospectus out, we target a date, but if another day comes along, you know, people refer to municipal bond professionals as ghouls of the markets. So whenever the stock market's down, it's really great for us because bond interest rates are going down. But if we have a day in the market where interest rates are driven down for some external reason, under a negotiated sale, we can just drop right in. You know, we can have a call with city staff, with the underwriter at, you know, 7, 8 in the morning and say, look, today's a great day. Let's go ahead and do it. Let's lock in those savings, and we do that. Under a competitive sale, that's just not possible. And so that's, I think those are some of the pros. And really the only con to a negotiated sale is what I like to call buyer's remorse. Again, we've selected these underwriters based on responses to RFPs, you know, outlining, you know, what they think they can do for us in selling the city's bonds. You know, that doesn't guarantee that that's exactly how they're going to do it. And so they may come to pricing and not be giving us what we expected. And so that's kind of the buyer's remorse. One of the ways that we're trying to alleviate that in this transaction is by having two underwriters. Again, Piper Jaffray is being recommended right now as the lead manager. But if they step out of line, we can replace them. We can swap out. Morgan Stanley can do that job for us. So it gives us a little bit of protection. And I think, Supervisor Bonkowski, I think the last thing I would say is what we are proposing isn't essentially unique. The unique thing would be if we tried to negotiate one series of bonds and then simultaneously sell the other series of bonds via competitive sale. That's not been done in the market for a couple of reasons. One, it's just really tough to pull off. Again, you lose all that flexibility in pricing because you want to price them the same day. And so the competitive sale will then dictate the timing. In addition, because this series of bonds and also the sewer bonds that are later are GO bonds, essentially they're going to have the same interest rates in the market. You know, people are going to say, look, I'm buying a Carson City GO bond. Yeah, one of them has some sewer revenues that they're using to repay. The other one has, you know, revenues from the general fund. But they're both GO bonds, so they get the same interest rate. We saw this back in December when we had both series of sales tax bonds. The bonds where they overlapped were generally the same interest rates. And again in 2013 when we sold three series of bonds with various, again, all GO bonds but different revenue pledges, essentially the bond yields were all the same. So practically it's just easier to put all of them under a negotiated sale or all of them under a competitive sale. And I think the last one that I'll stop here is that in terms of transaction costs, it will cost us less. Because in terms of documentation, we have one underwriter to deal with. We have one set of closing documents to provide instead of two. And so it saves on the professional fees like myself and Mr. Henry. But I'll pause there and see if there are any questions or follow-up.
Thank you, John. That was very informative. In fact, I'm tempted to ask for continuing education credit now.
Any other board comments or questions? Anybody? Public comments? Let me ask you a question along the continuing education line. Point out to me on the savings schedule where we take into account the bond issuance costs.
John Peterson with J&A Consulting. So if you look at the financial analysis that was attached to the bond ordinance, the very first page shows what we call the sources and uses of funds. And so what we have is, you know, we have all the money that's coming in from the bond proceeds and some cash that the city has to contribute. The transaction costs are in the right-hand column. There are two essential transaction costs. There's the cost of underwriting, and then there's the cost of the professional fees like myself, Mr. Henry, and some other fees. And so those are already baked into the transaction. We're paying all of those costs out of the debt service. And so when you look at the savings page, which I think is page 4. Is it 4, Nick?
Yeah. Do you know where we're at? It's the last 4 pages of what I included in the document. So it would be 1 of 4, and then it's the very last page is page 4 of 4.
Yeah, I got that.
Right. Okay. I just want to make sure
just look at the last page, and I just want to see, just reconcile the numbers for me, how the cost. Go to the last page.
Okay, the fourth page, you have these total savings. Now, these are already net of the transaction costs. Those have already been taken out. And so if we had no transaction costs, you know, we would see the savings on this refunding bond jump by about $200,000, just roughly. And so, again, these are net numbers. This is money that goes in the bank. It's not like we're going to, you know, save this money and then pull some more money out to pay, you know, the professional fees, et cetera.
Okay. All right. Now I'll apply for credit. Thanks. All right. Anything else? All right. Motion's in order. Who wants to make a motion to save money? Okay. Everybody?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Go, Lori. Okay. Go.
I move to introduce on first reading Bill number 109, an ordinance authorizing the issuance by the city of its Carson City, Nevada General Obligation Limited Tax Capital Improvement Refunding Bonds, additionally secured by pledged revenues, Series 2015C, for the purpose of refunding certain outstanding bonds of the city, ratifying action previously taken toward issuing the proposed bonds, and affecting the purpose of their issuance.
Motion and 4 seconds on the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried, unanimous.
That million.
Thank you.
Now you got to wait 5 years to get it all, I think, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Take the next one. Let's go to 19C. Right. Highway bonds.
19C would be the 2015 Highway Revenue Bond Ordinance. So we're basically going to be refunding some Regional Transportation Commission bonds. And I think on the just money-wise on that last page again, we're typically spreading this out over the whole life of the bonds. It's roughly $55,000 to $60,000 a year extra in interest rate savings. Again, we're not increasing the term of the bonds at all. We're just doing this for interest rate savings. And the total amount of the cash flow savings is about $808,000 with a net present value of about $640,000 and some change. So if there's any other questions, I believe the John's comments would apply to these bonds as well. So.
Public comment? Board comments? Motion's in order.
I move to introduce on first reading Bill number 110, an ordinance designated as the 2015 Highway Revenue Bond Ordinance, authorizing the issuance by Carson City of its fully registered Carson City, Nevada Highway Revenue Motor Vehicle Fuel Tax Refunding Bond Series 2015 for the purpose of refunding certain outstanding bonds of the city, providing the form, terms, and conditions of the bonds, and other details in connection therewith, and providing the effective date hereof.
Second.
Motion second on the motion. Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried, unanimous. Thank you. Let's take up the next bond.
Thank you, Mayor. For the
sewer
record,
refunding bonds?
Well, basically these are new money sewer bonds of $6 million. And then there's a small drainage piece that we're adding on to this of about $290,000. And I'll let John or Ryan explain why we're kind of adding that piece on there, because it's a little confusing. So,
For the record, Ryan Henry, I'm part of Bond Council. It is a little confusing, but the reason that we added on that small drainage piece is because those 2005B drainage bonds had a superior lien on a portion of the pledge revenues that go towards these bonds. And so from a disclosure standpoint, I'm not disclosure counsel, but from a disclosure standpoint, when we describe this transaction, it's just much cleaner if there's no outstanding superior debt and there was only one maturity remaining. You know, it's that June 1st, 2016 maturity. And John can speak more to it, but we're not extending that one maturity out over an additional number of years because we're going to have a payment on May 1st, 2016 that takes care of that small refunding piece. And then the other portion of these bonds, I believe Supervisor Bonkowski asked a question by email. The reason that we don't know the exact amount, you'll see that we say an amount not to exceed $6 million and an amount necessary to affect the refunding project is because right now we don't know the interest rate, so we don't know the exact amount to take out that old drainage bond, but that's the reason why there aren't two set amounts in this ordinance.
Thanks, John Peterson with Janney. I'd echo what Ryan said. He is correct. We are matching the refunding of that 2005 bond with the original term, so it's not extended. And I guess also to speak on the question about how much, the amount of bonds to issue to refinance that 2005 bond may change, but none of those changes will cause the city to lose money by refinancing them.
Lori.
Just a general question then. Does this eliminate all our 2005 bonds, so everything will be now renegotiated or gone? We don't have anything left?
John Peterson with JNA. Yes, this would get rid of the last maturity of the 2005 bonds. The obligation, obviously, is still there because we refinanced some of these last year, and now we're refinancing those. So there's still a debt service obligation, just not on that particular series.
And so this is the best opportunity for all our interest savings and we're there for probably the next few years. No more.
You
said that 2 years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Are we, it's kind of that crystal ball thing that we talked about earlier, that we're not going to be seeing any more refunding bonds for a while.
Well, I think what we try and do is take an active look at the city's outstanding debt. And whenever there are opportunities to save money, again, it's a great opportunity because that money is now used for city services rather than a debt payment. But I think practically to your question, I don't see anything on the near-term horizon or where we have an additional opportunity to refinance, but that's not to say that something couldn't pop up.
Other questions? Other questions? One last question for continuing education. If the Fed raises the discount rates, what happens to the rate? What happens to bond rates?
John Peterson with JNA Consulting. It's a little, it's not a direct correlation. So the Fed generally controls short-term interest rates, the overnight lending rate, and I think is widely expected they will make some sort of adjustment in that rate by the end of the calendar year. It's kind of a wait and see. We'll see what happens with the overall bond interest rates. It may have a pronounced impact. It may not. I personally believe that the municipal market has been pricing in the concept that rates are going to rise. And so we've seen rates steadily increase over the last, you know, couple of months since January and February. But that's just everyone kind of getting ready for it. For the bonds that we're proposing today, these are all going to be fixed rate bonds. So once we lock in that interest rate, no matter what the Fed does or anyone else does, that is the interest rate that we are going to be paying.
Good. Thank you. All right. Anybody else? All right. Motion's in order. Supervisor Avon, go.
I move to introduce on first reading Bill Number 111, an ordinance of the Board of Supervisors of Carson City, Nevada, providing for the issuance of general obligation limited tax sewer and refunding bonds additionally secured by pledged revenues, Series 2015B, providing the form, terms, and conditions thereof and covenants relating to the payment of said bonds and providing other matters relating thereto.
Motion and a couple seconds on the motion discussion. Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried unanimous. Let's take up 19E, the ad valorem tax rates. This is consistent with what we've done on the budget, 3.52.
Correct, Mayor. The actual Nevada Tax Commission has certified these rates on June 25th. you know, the board is required to certify the rates, so the treasurer will be able to bill the property tax bills later on in the month.
All right. Public comment? Board comment? Board motion's in order.
I move to adopt resolution number 2015-R29, a resolution to levy the Carson City fiscal year 2015-2016 tax rates as certified by the Nevada Tax Commission.
Second. Motion and a second. On the motion, discussion, hearing none. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried, unanimous. Let's take up item F, 19F, condition of fund. Any board members got any questions with respect to what's been handed out? Public comment on it? Hearing none. Motion's in order.
I move to accept the report on the condition of each fund in the Treasury and the statements of receipts and expenditures through June 23rd, 2015, per NRS 251.030 and NRS 354.290.
Motion in a couple seconds on the motion. Discussion. Hearing none. All in favor, signify by saying aye. Opposed, nay. Carried, unanimous. Okay. Let's now go to the collective bargaining agreements, the CBAs. We'll now open the hearing on the public hearing on the matter with respect to the fiscal impact of the collective bargaining agreement between the Carson City and Carson City Sheriff's Supervisory Association on behalf of the Carson City Sheriff's Lieutenants and Captains. All right. Public hearings and open. So what I want you to do is I want you to explain where we are, give an overview of it. We'll ask for public comment on the public part, board comments, and then we'll see where we go after that. We'll close the hearing and see what we do. Okay?
Good morning. Melanie Bruchetta, Carson City Human Resources Director. Before you today is approval of the Lieutenants/Captains Collective Bargaining Agreement, and I'll briefly go through what the changes, the proposed changes are. Under Article 5, based on a new state law, the association must reimburse the city for association business leave or offset the value of the leave taken with concessions. That was added in. Article 6, the contract adjustments changed 2% the first year and then 3% in year 2, 3, and 4. Also, we added shift differential, $2 per hour for each hour worked if the shift falls between 5 p.m. and 6 a.m. Article 9, overtime pay for phone calls was added in increments of 30 minutes. Article 11, annual leave was increased from 14 hours per month to 16 hours per month. Article 13, the dependent subsidy increases July 1st, 2017 from 50% to 65%. Article 13, the retiree subsidy will now include dental, life, and vision. I'm sorry, that was also Article 13. Article 19, standby pay increased from 50 cents an hour to $2 per hour. Article 26, advanced post pay went from $500 per year to 1.5% added to the base pay. Supervisory management went from 1.5% added to the base pay to 3% added to the base pay, and executive post went from 3% to 4.5% added to the base pay. Article 27, longevity changes. We increased the longevity based on pay, so it caps at 5.5% the first year and then 8% in the subsequent years. Article 34, fiscal emergency language was added, and Article 35, the successor agreement language was added due to new state law changes.
And the total cost? Oh, I'm sorry, the total cost? I'm sorry. How much?
My apologies, Mr. Mayor. I thought you might take a break before the public hearing.
Oh,
so
okay.
They're tubing it up right now. Just give them one moment.
Yeah, okay, I was thinking about taking a break, then I figured.
No, we'll have it right up here.
Okay, all right. No problem. Oh, we're fixing that up. I see we got members of Carson City's finest back there. Anybody want to say anything? Don't have to.
Good morning.
You guys are pretty smart. Good. And while we're fixing it up, let me ask you, Melanie, you know, the new law says that you post this 3 days in advance. Is that what I think that's what that statute says, or the new law, right?
That's correct. And Carson City's practice has always been to post the contract with the agenda, so we post it well in advance of the 3 days.
Very good.
All right, Nancy Paulson, Deputy Finance Director. The amounts in blue.
You kind of got to fix that a little bit. I don't know if that shows, if that, it's too big, I think.
Screen size. I think it's at 110.
Page 110. How do I fix that?
I can get there. I'm just trying to clarify the record for anybody who's watching it.
Yeah.
Nancy, just you got a scroll bar. Just scroll it over so we can see the last one. Yeah, that's all.
Oh, okay.
There you go. Okay. And then just for the record, so everybody knows where we are on the stuff, just give a rundown of what the cost, the contract cost is.
For fiscal year 16, we originally budgeted $454,792. This contract will increase fiscal 16 by $21,533. For fiscal 17.
Over the budgeted amount, right?
Correct. And then for fiscal 17 to 19, we had projected 3% increases for each of those fiscal years. So the amount of this contract above those, the 3%, for fiscal 17 is $33,966. In fiscal 18, it's $38,552. And fiscal 19, it's $45,118.
Okay. Public, want to weigh in on this issue? Anybody? Board, you got any questions or comments before
so
we?
So, if you add up all those numbers, what is the total increase over the over the period of the whole contract?
$139,169. So, the largest part of the increase is longevity pay, which is going from a flat rate to a percentage of the employee's base pay. In fiscal 16, that's 5.5%. In 17 through 19, it's 8%.
Longevity is part of other packages that we have, right?
Correct.
Okay.
All right. Any other comments? Supervisor Bagwell, go.
I just want to make a comment for the record that the supporting material that was listed on the agenda indicated sergeants, but the appropriate contract was actually noticed and attached for public comment. So I just want to clarify that the right contract is attached and was publicly provided, but it says sergeants inadvertently on the supporting material of the agenda item. But the right one was done.
I just wanted to make the comment that this is another case where, you know, where we've gone through the negotiation process, and at the end of the day, there's probably nobody that's happy with this contract, so which probably means we ended up in the right spot. So, anyway, for what it's worth.
Well, hopefully some people are happy with it. I would like to congratulate and say thank you to the Sheriff's Department for working with staff and coming to terms on this. I do appreciate that, and I do appreciate the effort that staff put into this contract as well. Thank you.
Okay. Anybody else? We're going to get ready to close the public hearing here. Okay. I don't see anything, so we're going to close the public hearing, and we'll now move to take the matter up under item 20B. So this is to discuss, approve, or disapprove of the collective bargaining agreement between Carson City and the Carson City Sheriff's Supervisory Association on behalf of the Carson City Sheriff's Lieutenants and Captains for the period July 1, 2015 through June 30, 2019. Board, further comments or questions? Motion's in order. Supervisor Abad.
I move to approve the collective bargaining agreement between Carson City and the Carson City Sheriff's Supervisory Association on behalf of the Carson City Sheriff's Lieutenants and Captains, July 1, 2015 through June 30th of 2019.
Motion and a second on the motion. Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried, unanimous. Okay, board. Do you want to take a break since we're, huh? We'll be in recess and we're moving right along here. So we'll be in recess for about 10 minutes. call the meeting of the Board of Supervisors back to order. We're now at item 21A. This is the issue that we've had before. This is to amend Carson City's Community Development Block Grant 2014-2015 Annual Action Plan to reallocate $25,000 to another eligible public improvement project. Mr. Plemmel, you want to take us through where we are? I know we know a little bit about this already, so go.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. For Lee Plemmel, Community Development Director, this is, as you said, the second step in a process of amending a community development block grant action plan. Just as a general summary, we had a project from the 2014-15 fiscal year that was allocated for $25,000 that has withdrawn. They did not spend the money or not going to spend the money, so it made this money available. As you said, it's for CDBG eligible funding, which is basically to benefit low to moderate income areas or persons, or which can include ADA access. And so we brought brought forward a proposal to you at the last meeting to replace the community development ADA lift. We happened to at the same time be having the maintenance folks tell us this thing's gonna break, we're gonna have to replace it. So we went to IFC with the proposal to use these funds to fix it, which is qualifying. We've done other ADA improvements around the community center in the past and brought that to you. It came up at the meeting that there are possibly other uses for it, so we contacted the Public Works, the Fish, and School District, who all have existing projects in the plan, and they've provided information in your packets about how they could utilize this money as well to add on or add on to their projects or improve their projects. So those are the it's been open for a period of at least 30 days public comment. We haven't received any additional public comment other than from those folks that we contacted that is in your plan. And I do want to note in the packet there, and I apologize, there's no page numbers, and I discussed that. But just before the amendment to the action plan, there is a page that starts "Hello, Ron," and then there's a list of kind of, and really it's just a maintenance history over the last year plus of calls for service for the lift. That's what that is. Ron is the city's facility maintenance person, head of that, and he's here if you do have any questions on more of the details about the lift. And so today you can take action to allocate this money to any of these or something else. We'll amend the action plan accordingly and coordinate that with HUD to get the applicable documents amended.
Disclosures.
I'd like to disclose that I'm on the board of directors of Fish, but I receive no personal benefit from any actions that could be taken today concerning that item, so I will be voting. Thank you, as I have previously done.
Very good. Okay, any other disclosures? Hearing none, public comment, anybody? I'm glad you put the ADA lift at the top of the list. All right. Okay, board, what's your pleasure? Somebody want to ink in on a motion? Go.
That's an order. Yeah. Lee, if we did not approve this money going towards the ADA lift, would one of your options then be to go back to IFC and ask for break fix funds to repair that?
Yeah, and again, I think Ron's in the audience. I don't think we wouldn't do anything immediately. It would be when it breaks. You want to cover what? Maybe I'd like to have Ron tell you about that.
I am Ron Reed with the Facility Maintenance Manager. And your question was, I couldn't hear it earlier.
If we did not approve this $25,000 for the ADA lift, would community development go back to IFC and ask for break fix funds to repair it or replace it?
What's the status
of it? Well, at this time, we don't have the funds in our budget to repair this. And talking with the maintenance contractor that we have now for elevators, it is a safety issue. The design on this elevator is no longer being used. It's the parts are no longer available. So at one point, yeah, we are going to have to go back to IFC if it's not approved. But this was just a way that we could get it done sooner than later. So it doesn't put the city on a liability issue.
I would. Supervisor Bunkowski, if you don't, as Ron said, if the board does not use CDBG funds for the lift replacement, the only other possible source would be, and the only other possible process would be, facilities maintenance would have to go to the IFC, and they would then be general fund dollars that the city would spend in order to either fix or replace the exist. I don't know if that answered your question.
Yes, that's the answer I was looking for.
Okay, thank you.
Supervisor Shirk, then Supervisor Bagwell.
Well, to fix the library elevator, we went to the facility division for $65,000. We couldn't do that for this lift in this building?
In answer to a question for Supervisor Shirk, I asked the librarian, looks like Nick's coming up, but yeah. It was approximately $65,000 to replace the elevator. That was a different type of elevator.
Right. I think there's only one pot of money. So the one pot of money is in the capital fund. So we were looking for ways to find other money to fix the lift in the community development building. I don't want to call it the brick anymore, because I don't think that's the proper term. But anyway, the CDBG money was available to fix that elevator or that lift. If we don't use CDBG money, then we're going to have to use the capital money that, is basically one pot of money that we'd have to use. And we wouldn't be able to do something else for $25,000 because we'd have to fix the lift, basically.
So, but you want to use the funds from this, per se, earlier grant allocation because we don't have the money in the capital funding.
Well, there's money in there. I mean, there's probably a couple hundred thousand dollars in there, but I mean, if you don't use it, there's $6 million worth of needs. that's the problem, is that there's other needs for that money. So if you didn't, if you had to use the money for the lift, then you couldn't do it for something else. Remember that list that we presented you at the budget? There was $6-7 million worth of needs. So there's only a finite amount of money. So it's just prioritizing,
right?
Basically.
So where was this ever prioritized? What number was this on that total list of
well,
the ICU?
I'm not sure that was on the list. Yeah. It just broke, right?
Yeah, it just came up recently because the gear drive that drives the thing is bent. It's also causing the belts to break. Like I said, it becomes a safety issue because the new elevators have a braking system, so if something breaks, it stops the elevator there. This one does not. It will actually spiral back down to the ground.
Okay. Well, before we make a motion, I would definitely like to hear from those in the audience that are here asking and seeking the $25,000. I would like to add that, sadly, if we can't, as a community and as a city entity, find the $25,000 in our own budget that we have to go outside and use allocation that was granted, I think maybe we ought to look at the budget, because $25,000 out of the $6 million, I think we should use our own funds and not take this. But I'd still like to hear from the entities who would like or seeking the funds.
Okay. Anybody?
Go.
Richard, just a minute. I stepped on Lori Bagwell's comments here. Lori, I'm sorry.
So, thank you. I just want to clarify, when looking at all of these, the use of the dollars, the city qualifies to use CDBG funding. We are one of the applicants. But for me, I just want to clarify a discussion on the use. So if we took $25,000 from the capital fund, that's all general fund dollars to do the lift, versus do we have an opportunity to use the $25,000 out of CDBG dollars and get matching dollars, so that which is the better benefit for the taxpayer as a whole. So in one of these applications, in the sidewalk one, I want to clarify whether matching dollars is available or not, because then for the taxpayer as a whole, that would help me make my decision is what gets me the greatest dollars into the community. So if when you come up, you can let us know for sure whether or not the $25,000 could be matched for more sidewalks.
Now, Richard. Good morning, Superintendent. How are you doing?
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, members of the board. Richard Stokes for the record. It's a pleasure to be with you this morning, and thank you for your consideration for use of these additional dollars. As you are aware, Carson City School District has been planning for several years, and it looks like we're getting very close to fruition, working with the Nevada Health Center's folks to bring to pass a school-based health center to the community. And we have been fortunate to be a recipient of these dollars over the last 2 years, and we're in a situation too where we're using capital dollars from our budget to try to finish this project. And so if there is an opportunity for us to tap into any additional monies that are available, we certainly would petition this body for that possibility. If you have any questions about our project, we are planning to open in the 1st of October of this coming school year. And we're beginning the tentative improvements and the work that is going to turn a mobile classroom essentially into a facility that qualifies as a health center. And this will be available to children and families of school-age children in Carson City, so they don't have to be just students of ours. They can be homeschooled, they can be private schooled, anybody, they can be homeless, anybody of the school age and their family will actually qualify for these services. As you know, when kids come to school sick, they're not able to learn well. And when we have acute cases with students, sometimes they're unable to actually get in and see doctors quickly. And we view this as a great benefit to the city. And so we certainly thank you for considering our request in this matter.
Sure. Jim.
Good morning. Where is the location of this health center going to be?
If you are familiar with our building, we call it the Professional Development Building. It's also called the Martha Gleason Building. It's just off of West Musser, about a block away from Bordewick Bray. It's right behind that facility.
If the allocated funds, if you don't receive these allocated funds, will you still be open? Will you still be able to open in October?
Member Shirk, we are planning to be open at the 1st of October. This would obviously ease our burden if we were to receive any of these funds.
Karen.
And Richard, for the record, you don't need the full $25,000. Your request is $19,946.
Mm-hmm. That is correct. Thank you.
Okay.
So, on this one, is this a question of which general fund it comes out?
So it would seem, Mr. Mayor.
I got you. All right. And any other questions of Richard or Val? Okay. Thanks, Richard. It was good to have a joint meeting the other night. Richard, could I ask you a question on the record here? I'm sure other board members maybe have too, but this has nothing to do with this, but where do people apply if they want to get the grant for sending their kids to other schools? Do they go to you? Do they go to the state? Where do they go?
Mr. Mayor, once again, Richard Stokes for the record. We are still waiting for guidance from the State Department of Education on much of the legislation that was passed during this last session. It's trickling in. Obviously, we're anxious to receive some of the information as it applies to funding. As you know, there were a number of bills passed that will augment education, but just exactly how that looks, we're not quite there yet with guidance from the State Department.
streets, sidewalks.
Morning, Mr. Mayor, Supervisors.
Tell us whether you can leverage it.
Okay.
All right.
Dan Denges, Senior Transportation Planner for the record. So the nice thing about the CDBG funds is that they already are 100% reimbursable. For this particular project, we estimate we have about $50,000 in Federal Transit Administration funds, which we do intend on using to supplement the project as well. Those funds require a 20% match, basically. So we were originally awarded about $190,000 in the CDBG funds. So there's more than enough to match the FTA funds. So to answer Supervisor Bagwell's question, the additional $25,000 won't really leverage any more matching funds, but it will basically allow us to do $25,000 more work.
Is the sidewalk issue an ADA issue?
Yeah, there are several, really, since it's a residential neighborhood, there's several driveways in the area that are not compliant at all. And there's a couple curb ramps, too. As was noted in your backup material, we believe the additional funding will allow us to construct either five new ADA-compliant curb ramps or an additional 600 feet of sidewalk or some combination thereof. But really, there's more work there than even what the funding would allow. This, to kind of put in perspective, this is about our third go-around in this area where we've used CDBG funds to construct the improvements there.
Very good. Thank you, Daniel. Questions of Daniel? Other things? Thank you. All right. Anybody else? Anybody here? Fish? Anybody? Okay. Any other public comment? Anybody want to weigh in? Board?
My preference on this would really be to fund about half of the request for the school district and FISH and give the balance to community development. However, the more I think about that, I realize that then we're putting community development in the position of having to go to IFC to ask for the balance, and if IFC said no, then we're going to be right back here having the same conversation in the future. So because of that, I think I'm going to go with giving the money to community development.
Well, I don't. You know, it seems to me that these funds are for ADA improvements, low-income areas. You know, and I don't know how you really make a judgment call between what's more important, a low-income improvement or an ADA improvement. But I do think that, you know, if you've got a problem where you can't get somebody to the second floor of a public building, you've got a problem. And that's to me that weighs strongly in favor of fixing that elevator. So, Lori.
I just have a question: is $25,000? You need that full amount to fix it?
Sorry. Actually, the quotes range from $27,000 to $36,000.
So you'll still be coming to IFC regardless.
Sorry. Oh, for the difference? I believe we take let it
me,
out of...
Let me address it, Ron. We budget... I think it's 150,000. I don't know where Nick is. Yeah, he's giving me a positive sign. We budget $150,000 annually. We did our current fiscal year. So the funds are available within Ron's, what we call the break-fix budget, to fill in the remainder of that amount. So with the $25,000, that kind of provides the bulk of the funding, and we'll be able to fund the remaining part of that.
Then I'm in agreement with this because we have a liability that definitely will present itself if we don't get this fixed.
Lori, then Jim.
Well, I just want to say too, I think we have an obligation to ensure our buildings are ADA compliant, and so I'm going to vote for the community development lift.
Jim. I disagree. I believe that, this funding should be used in, such a manner as it was first allocated, the $25,000 going out to volunteer groups and so forth. I believe the, money should go to the school board. I think it would help children in our area. I think we have a duty and responsibility to do that. I think the remaining portion should go to FISH. And I think we, as a elected official, we review our budget. And if we don't have money in the capital funds to take care of such items as this, I think we need to review our capital investment and procedures of how we allocate money for fix-it programs such as this. We bought this building, we purchased this, and I think it's our duty and responsibility as a city to be compliant, not the duty and the allocation of grant funding such as this, because that's what it's set aside for. So I will not vote in favor of it.
Okay, motion's in order.
I move to amend the Carson City Community Development Block Grant, CDBG, for 2014-2015 Annual Action Plan to reallocate the $25,000 to the Community Development ADA Lift Replacement Project.
Motion second on the motion. Discussion? Hearing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay?
Nay.
All right. Passes 4-1. All right. Let's take up the District Attorney. Bill number 108. Who's Joe here?
No.
Thank you, Richard.
We're on residential.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute.
21B.
Moving right along here. Too fast. Okay. Rick, Lee, take us through the residential permit allocation issue.
Thank you. This item is to adopt a resolution relating to the city's growth management ordinance. And yes, the city does have a growth management ordinance, which requires the board annually to establish the number of residential building permit allocations that will be available in the next year and estimates for following years. It requires the establishment of the percentage of, building permit allocations that go between two different categories called development category and general property owner. And you also annually review and set the maximum average daily water usage for commercial and industrial building permits, establishing a threshold for Growth Management Commission review, and the Planning Commission acts as the Growth Management Commission. So I also, you have the report attached in more detail on the background of the ordinance and information in there. I like to take this opportunity each year to kind of give an update on the status of the, a little bit of the history and projections of where we're going with, growth. So just briefly, I'll run through this pretty quickly. This is a chart of the complete history of residential allocations under the growth management ordinance, with the upper black line being the allotted number of residential allocations each year, and the white line below that being the number that have been actually used. Obviously, since the recession, we've been had very slow growth and not many residential permits, and it's been since hasn't been since 1996 that the number of permits in any given year have actually approached the limit that's been set. And generally, over the history of the growth management program has been that the allocation allotment has been roughly proportionate to about a what would equate to about a 3% growth rate in Carson City. There's a little bit shorter history since 2000, but this is the residential allocations that have been issued by type, with the base there, the yellow base being the single family residential permits. The red checker is multifamily, and there's some other categories in there. But again, not much over the last about 8 years now. I just include this information from the assessor's office on home sales that put into a graphic form, the top chart being the number of home sales since 2004, and the bottom being the median home sales price. So if you want to see anything a little bit positive in this, on that lower chart, we have the
The light blue, the dark blue line is single family home sales. On top there, it's the median price, and for the last 2 years, they've been going up. For this year, it's obviously a limited data set. We haven't gone through the summer yet, but so far in the early portion of the year, the median home sales prices have been going up. But it looks like the volume has been down. So I like to use this every year, too. I think this is my last graphic that I have, but I think over, as the graphics indicate, you know, there hasn't been much activity and growth over the last about 8 years now. I think there's kind of, I feel that there's been a little bit of sense of that's the new normal of no growth, but it's a reminder that actually there, we have quite a bit of capacity for growth in this city in terms of both land use and water, which we'll talk about a little bit here. You know, we're at a population of about 55,000 now, and we have land and water resources to accommodate about 75 to 80,000 people. Now, that's way out there. You know, we haven't experienced a really steep growth rate in Carson City in a number of years. We estimate about, you know, just for planning purposes, for water, sewer, transportation, we look at about 1% going out, which puts us at build out at about, you know, about 50 years from now. It's a long time from now. It's not imminent. We do have relatively slow growth. But it shows there is still some capacity for growth, and we are still going to see new businesses and new residences coming in. So to sum up the Growth Management Commission recommendations that are in the resolution that you would be adopting is to establish a total of 638 residential allocations for next year, and then for estimates for subsequent years as in the resolution. The split of allocations between the general and developer categories is just the same percentage that it's historically been. And then finally, where there is a little bit, we're deviating from the status quo this year as recommended by Public Works, is to increase the water uses threshold for Growth Management Commission review for commercial and industrial development from 7,500 gallons average per day to 15,000 average gallons per day. Just to talk a little bit about this and tee it up again, this is not a maximum permitted usage for any given use. This is a threshold above which we take a little bit closer look at it. We take it to the Planning Commission acting as the Growth Management Commission. And so the history of the 7,500 is that's been the number literally for decades now. It was at a time when that much water was a much greater percentage of the overall water usage than it is today. We've had a lot of improvements to the water system since then. We have water capacity coming in since then. And so, and again, Darren Schultz is here to address any questions that you have regarding this, but basically that a 7,500 gallons per day is very routine. It's about what a restaurant like Olive Garden uses on an annual average daily. And they were a little bit above that. They actually came in for growth management review. So the recommendation is to increase that to 15,000 average gallons per day. And that's my conclusion of my report. Again, also Darren Schultz of Public Works. You've had the presentation on the water and the projections and the allocations in the acre feet that's capacity for the future. You've had that presented by Public Works previously. The Planning Commission got that same water report, and so their decision kind of followed that water presentation and information regarding that, and with that information, and their recommendation is to increase it to 15,000 per Public Works recommendation.
Okay. Public comment? Anybody? Board? Supervisor Shirk?
What is the, we're doubling the allocation from 7,500 to 15,000. What is the thought process of doubling that amount? Why double?
Darren Schultz, Public Works, for the record. What happened is we probably should have done this a long time before now. The 7,500 was established back in the 80s, and it was part of a moratorium that was put on Carson City based on our water rights and the available water rights that we had to issue new permits. And the state took a look at us and said,
you don't, we're not comfortable with your accounting message or methods such that you could be issuing too many permits to for what how much water rights you have available. So that's when that was established, and that was sometime in the 80s. So we've been bumping along with that threshold since then. But what's happened on the other side is in our management of water here in Carson City, as we explained when we presented, we did the water presentation, is that we have acquired much, much more acre feet of water here for available use. So we feel comfortable that we now have over 5,000 acre feet available of water for development, 15,000. That's about 16 acre feet. So we feel really comfortable that there's no reason we need to have a special hearing for that low usage.
Another part of the discussion was that since that time, since the 80s, the city development standards relating to water have significantly improved to where water conservation is now incorporated into the standards, so that really even when there's growth management review, there's really not any additional requirements that are put on them, because it's already written into newer development standards to use these water conservation fixtures and methods.
When commercial businesses come to you, and they're, as it is right now, it's 7,500, and they say, we only need 6,000, and later they're using 8,000, does that, I mean, for growth management to approve it at 6,000, then they end up in using more gallons, does that mean anything? Is there any consequences? Or
so the review is based on an initial estimate. It's the worksheet, so it's a review by engineering, and they estimate based on their use how much they're going to use. So in that case, it's not retroactive. I mean, I don't think that, you know, Public Works, we're not looking at actual water bills to see if they then exceed that. But so it's, you know, and so it has to be within a reasonable amount of an industry standard for a restaurant, hotel, whatever it is, a certain industry, how much water do they use. So they take a look at it as an estimate and do it, and if it seems silly to them that somebody's really lying about it, I think they'd catch it. But it's, yeah, we don't go back and look at the actual water usage. So if they say it's a little bit less and it ends up being a little bit more, we're not retroactively doing growth management review.
So the Growth Management Commission is approving or looking at this based upon the application, but they could end up using more than the application says, and there's no balance to any of that.
There is a potential for that happening, but we have really good industry standards. For instance, Olive Garden, we have a really good industry standards of what that facility is going to use in terms of water. That's not to say that there's not going to be unique commercial or industrial users that come in, that we have nothing anywhere written that tells us what their processes are going to use in water. When that's the case, we just have to go through it and look at fixtures and what they're going to be doing and trying to come up with something. So we don't retroactively go back, but we also don't feel uncomfortable with decisions that we've made in the past.
And anything at this level now, we will not have, per se, I guess, growth management will not look at any commercial coming in that's less than the 15 gallons. And how did you arrive at 15,000 gallons? Where did that number come from?
I got to say that us at Public Works, we would probably be comfortable with 30,000, but we felt like let's do this now, and we'll look at it again in a couple of years. We don't need to necessarily go there. This hasn't been a problem asking people to come and do this. I mean, it's not, but at the same time, for our next, I keep going back to Olive Garden, but for our next Olive Garden that comes in, it's just not appropriate to send them through that extra step when it just doesn't matter to us. It's not a critical item that we need to be watching like we used to.
Thank you.
Karen, then Brad.
In terms of growth management, and in lieu of the Schultz Ranch sale and permits, first of all, are you comfortable with that and the Lampa Ranch sale and what's going on, that that allocation will handle what's coming?
Yes.
And then secondly, in lieu of growth and wastewater management, are we looking realistically at the Brunswick Canyon issue so that going forward in storage and of effluent and so forth, that we are adequately accommodating what's coming?
I was afraid that was going to come up once he shows graphs looking out that far. As you'll remember, it was a few years ago where we were starting to consider the idea that we would run out of places to put effluent. After what's happened over the last 6 or 8 years, that's obviously not our problem anymore, and we're trying. We don't have enough. So I've got to say that we're looking at it, but it's really kind of on the back burner. It's something that, you know, we'll watch that growth curve really carefully, and if we can put several years that we show a 1% or a 2% growth or whatever to where we can start projecting that out, then we would start looking at those plans again as to where we're going to store or where we're going to reuse water.
Darren is correct. There's readily available market data. I could go online right now and by industry SEC code or by industry standards, you can look up what a particular business type will use on a average, either regionally or nationally. So it's not going to tell you what a specific location is going to do. It could be a little more, it could be a little less, but you can get a very accurate range of water that will be used by a particular industry. I can tell you, too, that when we work with especially manufacturers, anything that we can do to shave 2 to 4 weeks off their timeline to be able to move in, and this is just one more meeting that they have to have, one more commission that they have to come in front of, it makes our job a little easier to get them here and get them open. And my last point would be that we're actually, as Darren said, we're now actually in a position to where if we had more flow going through our plant, it would actually help us, not hurt us. Because we do have a shortage of effluent. So between those three things, you know, again, I'd really like to see this at 30,000 because it has become more of an issue having it 7,500 than it would be to just pick that realistic number based on the world that we live in and the companies that we're dealing with now.
So actually reading the document, and you had indicated for a few years you'd look at the 15,000. The way I'm reading paragraph E, is this only for 2015? It says, prior to the issuance of building permits, any commercial industrial projects proposed in 2015. So I don't read this. It gives you authority past 2015 for the increase of 15,000. Did you intend this to be the new threshold from this point forward? Until we relook at this?
Yeah, we do this every year. So we're saying for 2015, we're going to 15,000. 2016, we may come back and for whatever reason go down or go up. But yeah, this is for 1 year, is my understanding.
Excuse me, Supervisor Bagwell, can you direct me to what portion of the resolution?
Page 19, paragraph E.
Look at the one that's in your packet on page 3. So that's been cleaned up. So that I want to point that out. So the intent, so the resolution you're adopting is right behind the board action form. Starts on page, It actually is numbered starting at page 1. But then on page 3 of that.
It doesn't have a date, but the other backup does.
It says, so the intent of it, and as it's written into the resolution, I wanted to point this out because typically we wait another. It does say any commercial industrial project proposed after the adoption of this resolution that exceeds $15,000 average gallons per day. So the intent of this is that we would start implementing that immediately, and it's reviewed. And you readopt. It'll be in another year. You'll be readopting either this standard again or a new one. So the intent, to answer your question, the intent is that it would be effective with the adoption of this resolution.
Okay, I'm a little bit confused.
So you're looking at the draft resolution that went to the Planning Commission that did say
2015.
If it was in error, it said 2015, and that's how I wrote it to intend to be now. it would typically have said 2016. It's corrected and modified in the resolution you're considering today to say it would be effective upon adoption of the resolution.
So we have a different resolution than the one that the Planning Commission
just
saw.
Just on that.
Okay. I just wanted to. So it is your intent to put it at 15,000 ongoing unless we change it at a different date?
Until changed, it would be that, yes.
Okay. And then just the other purpose is to put them through the growth management is to ensure that we have sufficient water. It's another data check that does not normally occur in your planning processes. That's the reason to go to growth management, is to force another type of review. So if we got into a water crunch somewhere and we needed to, then you're saying you'd come back to us and say, whoops, we're going to have to change it from 15,000 gallons back down to 7,500 because we don't have sufficient water.
Correct. That's what we could do.
Okay.
That.
Thank you.
When it goes to growth management, what is the process? I mean, how long does it take to go through there to get the okay? I mean, it's just an.
So the growth management the Planning Commission acts as the growth management commission. So in taking applications in, that's a 6-week lead time. They meet once a month. We take applications 6 weeks before that. Honestly, on growth management items, they've been relatively so routine. We've been a little bit flexible on that, but only by a week or so if they're a little bit late. But so it could be an extra 45 to 60 days for a project.
Okay, public comment? Board, are we ready for motion? Supervisor Abbott, go.
I move to adopt a resolution number 2015-R30, amending the number of residential building permit allocations under the Carson City Growth Management Ordinance for the years 2016 and 2017, and estimating the maximum number of residential building permits for the years 2018 and 2019. Establishing the number of residential building permit allocations available within the development and general property owner categories, and establishing a maximum average daily water usage for commercial and industrial building permits as a threshold for Growth Management Commission review as recommended by the Planning Commission.
Second. There's a motion and a second on the motion discussion. Yes. Discussion's in order.
Do we need to, in that, the water usage, do we need to put in there the gallons, or is by the resolution, it's clearly
In the resolution.
In the resolution, correct?
It's on the staff summary as well, so that
okay.
You've noticed as such.
Thank you.
All right. On the motion, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried, unanimous. Okay, thank you. All right. All right, now we'll go to 22, second reading of the utility franchises and requirements. Ready, Annie?
Hi,
Adriana. Welcome back. How was your vacation?
Thank you. It was wonderful.
Good
Thank
to
you
have you
for
back.
Letting me be
Any
gone
changes
for
to this on from first reading?
No, there isn't. It's the same exact thing. And basically, this is a housekeeping measure in line with the DA's objective to clean up those items in the code that may be outdated and bring them up to date with the statutes.
Okay. Public comment? Hearing none. Board?
2015-7.
Motion's in order.
I move to adopt Bill number 108 on second reading, Ordinance number 2015-7, an ordinance repealing Carson City Municipal Code Title V, Public Utility Franchises and Requirements, Chapter 5.02, TCI of Nevada, Inc., and replacing the repealed language with a new Chapter 5.01 and amended Chapter 5.02, compliant with Chapters 709 and 711 of the NRS pertinent to telecommunications and video services and enacting other provisions properly related thereto.
Second. Motion in a couple seconds on the motion discussion. Hearing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Carried, unanimous. Nick, at some point in time, can I have have somebody look at if this increased the revenue that came off that franchise, or in other words, was there a pickup of additional revenue that we weren't in the past? I'd just like to know that. All right.
Will do, Mr. Mayor.
All right. Now, you don't, there's nothing to worry about right for this, but okay. Melanie, you're going to take up the city manager's objectives?
Melanie Bruchetta, Human Resources Director. Before you today, you asked me to bring back the city manager's goals and objectives for this fiscal year, and that's what you have before you. Please note that Supervisor Abow did ask that a change be made on the city manager's proposed objectives, and that's objective number one, to use a CMAR on each project, but I believe that you plan to have discussion on that today.
All right. Nick, anything you want to add to this? I know you prepared this. Anything you want to add?
I do, Mr. Mayor. I spoke with Supervisor Abow yesterday. When I first did the presentation here, I highlighted my top three. She asked me to expand and include what my top five would be for the year. And I want to talk about the first addition that I would put in addition to the ones that are in bold print, which were my original top three. So I would also add, if I were going to include the top five, manage and oversee compliance of the 1/8% revenue projects. I would recommend that we put a period there just because the animal shelter has already, I mean, we are where we are with that, unfortunately. That's going to go out to bid as a plan and spec project. But I think if I understand your intent behind that, we could probably work in maybe an addition, if one of you wanted to add it as part of the motion, that for any additional projects down the line that currently are not in any stage of either work or bidding or anything like that, that we use a CMAR. If that's the direction of the board, I would recommend that it be for anything that is currently not either working or being put out to bid. And I think that would accomplish Supervisor Abow's intent there. So I would add that as one of my top five. And then I would also propose to you to add to the top five to enhance the public's ability to participate in the fiscal year 2017 budget planning process. They would be my only comments on it, and I'm available to answer your questions at this time.
Thanks. I actually would like to add two items for discussion here, and I discussed it with Nick on Monday. I'd also like us to put something dealing with our internal audits. We have several outstanding audits that we have not prepared final responses or implementation plans. So I'd like that to be a priority, that over this year, all prior internal audits at least have responses prepared so that we can clear any of the outstanding audit measures that we have. And then based on the last few meetings and discussions on the liquor licenses that we've been seeing, I'd also like a review concerning the duties of liquor managers and any conditions that we would like to add into our ordinance to see. Just a review. It doesn't mean we'll change anything, but I think it's worthy of a look.
Nick, I think that I agree with you with your change on the top goal here. If we put a period after projects and delete and use a CMAR on each project, and the reason I say that is because in any particular scenario, maybe a CMAR is best, maybe design build is best. So instead of locking ourselves in, I think we just need to understand that we want to look at the different possibilities and pick the one that fits best for the city given that particular scenario. And then I've also received a couple of comments this last week about why we as a board are not putting performance measures into your goals. And my answer to those people has been, we have that ability because we review you every year, and if we don't like the job you're doing, we can't fire you. So I just wanted to put that on the record to the people that are wondering why we don't build something into this. We actually have that ability. You don't do a good job, we can fire you.
All
And if this would be considered also along this goals and objectives, are to improve our city website to include a Spanish link for our Spanish community here. I think that would be really helpful. I would encourage the city manager to ask department managers to give monthly updates to the board on a rotating basis in public. I would like to see an improvement in the method of how we look at contracts and grant datelines. We're coming with contracts that are just BAC is a great example. It was coming up. I mean, the contract, we needed an extension. I think we need to look at dates of when contracts and grants will be, you know, coming up. I would also like to see some environmental green initiatives for our community, too. You know, Lake Tahoe does a great job of doing a lot of recycling of natural resources. They're picked it up, and green initiatives, I think, would be great for our community. And improvement in our overall grant programs, it seems like. I think there's a lot. I know there was talk of hiring a full-time grant personnel. I think that should be something that comes to the board and looked at, because I think we're missing a lot of opportunity to achieve and obtain grants that would help our community. Those are just my thoughts. Thank you.
Okay, public comment? All right. Anybody want to try a motion? I mean, it seems to me that some of these things that we discussed are probably more routine and implementing type than goals, but and frankly, I see them all as capable of being done under what we've got here. But you can try a motion. That's all right. Go.
I move to define and prioritize the desired outcomes the board deems necessary for the proper operation of the city and the attainment of the Board of Supervisors' policy objectives by establishing the city manager's goals and objectives for fiscal year 2016 with an emphasis based on our discussion here today.
Second.
Motion in a couple seconds on the motion. Good enough for you, Nick? Think so?
Yes, sir.
Kind of squishy,
and
that's okay.
These are all great. I thought they were great additions. I'll provide an email summary back to you at the conclusion.
Well, while you're talking about great things, put noise ordinance on there. On the motion. On the motion. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay, carried. Thanks. Okay. All right. All right. Let's take up item 24. This is to appoint a member of the Airport Authority from the manufacturer position. As I mentioned earlier in this meeting, my partner, my law partner, and a longtime personal friend is the counsel for the Airport Authority. And since the Airport Authority appoints that position, it is a direct conflict for me to participate in the appointment of board members to the Airport Authority. So I'm going to turn the gavel over. I'm going to disclose that, and I will abstain from voting, and I'll leave the dais while we do this, and I'm going to turn the gavel over to Supervisor Ebaud.
I think we'll wait for the city manager to introduce our first candidate. Welcome. I'm going to have you introduce yourself to the board, and then I'll ask the first question, and the whole panel will have a question for you. And I want to thank you in advance for your applying for this position.
My name is Dayton Murdoch.
Dayton, why do you want to do this, number one, and describe how your background would provide new insight on this board, should you be appointed?
Mm-hmm. I believe my
life experiences and my professional experiences could be an asset to the airport. Second part of your question?
What in your background makes you well-suited to be on this board?
I've been in manufacturing my entire life. The last 15 years, I've had my own shop. And just through those experiences, I believe I could have a positive influence on the airport.
Let's go next, Brad.
Dayton, my question to you is, what are your thoughts on commercial development adjacent to the airport and through the fence access?
Well, commercial development is positive for the community, and through the fence access isn't a problem as long as there's some guidelines for the businesses that are seeking that through the fence access.
Good morning. Can you tell me specifically what businesses you have run and how many employees you've supervised and the types of jobs that they've done and you've done that would help bring that experience and further the airport goals?
Twenty years ago, I was a foreman at a machine shop. I had 36 people that were direct reports to me. Through the years, I've been in several positions where I've had direct reports. And, through that whole process of doing reviews and hiring and firing and all of those experiences, in the last 15 years, 2000, I decided to start my own business. And I developed a throttle quadrant system, pitot tubes, tail wheels, and such for the experimental aircraft market. So over the time, I've gone from being an employee to having my own business. Currently, it's a small business of myself and my wife and occasionally my son to produce my products.
Good morning, late afternoon, early afternoon. Can you tell us, when you sit on the Airport Authority, one of the goals or objectives of the present Airport Authority is to get more people involved in coming to the airport and exposure of the airport and what it does for the community? Could you have any thoughts on how you could help that be achievable for the Airport Authority?
Well, maybe defining the scope. I mean, it's one thing to have a bunch of people show up, but you have to have a direction. Why are these people here? What are we doing? Developing the airport for commercial application or for recreation application, there has to be a scope defined. I could probably help define that scope a little bit and achieve a balance. Personally, my goal or my view is I'm a steward. My goal would be for the airport to be there 50 years from now for the citizens of Carson City to enjoy, not for me to enjoy for this moment, but just more of a long-term, resource for the community. And ultimately, I think the city supervisors are going to define a lot of what that scope is going to be.
Thank you, Dayton. Is there anything else you would like to add?
No.
You're welcome to stay while we interview the other candidate. And again, thank you for applying. We do realize that. Welcome. I'll have you go ahead and introduce yourself, and thank you for applying. And then from there, I'll ask the first question, and the board will ask you a series of questions.
My name is Don Peterson. I've been a resident of Carson City since 2006. I was a previous member of the Airport Authority for a couple of years in an unfinished term. I'm beginning to think I'm the relief pitcher in this project.
Thank you, Don. You've already alluded to some, but why do you want to do this again? And what else in your background makes you well-suited for this position?
I've resisted Steve Takis's cajoling for several years. I like Steve. I enjoyed working with him. I enjoyed working on the authority before. It was pleasant in all regards. There was some work to be done, and I'm happy to contribute. I'll admit that the prospect of a four-year term when he first proposed it some time ago didn't really fit some schedules I had, but it just so happens I've got a gap in here, and I'm happy to contribute to it. As far as the qualifications, in my opinion, the chief one is I have no agenda. In fact, when I came off the board some number of years ago, I walked away from it and went back to being a private citizen and a pilot and enjoying my life. People do come up to me. They'll tell me their opinions of things that are going on, and I nod my head and smile and say thank you very much and carry on. And that was the case when I went on the board last time. I went in. The two guys that encouraged me to run ended up getting very mad at me because I didn't pursue their agendas. I just sniffed the ground and went after what appeared to need working on. And that's where I'm at this time. I was there at the airport day a few weekends ago. It was very nice. I enjoyed being at the airport. From sitting way out in the distance, I don't see any crisis. Now, I might find something different when I get there. To your question about what I might bring to it, I'm retired now. I was previously on the board as a manufacturer. Now I would just be a private citizen. But I kind of made a career of what I did last. I was a partner with Ted Barbin. Some of you may know him. He was previously on the airport board. And he was ready to retire, and I took over the company from him as his partner, with the express goal to get it ready for the next phase of moving it from a wonderful little entrepreneurship with no systems, no inventory control, a controller that was stealing from us, we found that out later, to a company that another company would want to buy. And 4 years later, we had a completely audited company with ISO 14000, inventory control, manufacturing, planning, you know, the whole thing. And a completely improved financial system as well. Much of that I didn't see coming in, and that's my point about the Airport Authority, is you come in, you start listening, you start looking at what the opportunities are, and then bring a business mind to it. Segregation of duties in the case of accounting is one of the basics. That's how we solved a problem over there. But again, my assumption is not that there's some big glaring thing that needs to be fixed. That may present itself after I get there.
Thank you, Don. I appreciate that. All right, Lori, you want to go next?
Sure. Thank you. Can you please tell me your prior experience running businesses, how many employees you supervised in the types of jobs, and how you think that will help you further the goals of the airport?
I was born at a very young age. By the time I was in my early 30s, I had made it to vice president of operations of a $100 million corporation, managing 18 warehouses and 450 people. And ever since then, I've been working my way down. So by the time I came out here, I was doing what I loved, which was being part of a small entrepreneurial company. When I took over the company, we were about 38 employees. By the time we sold it and I retired, it was in the mid-70s. So I'm comfortable at all ranges, from the big bureaucratic battleship down to the small operations that need hands-on work. And I won't say that every task I've undertaken has ended on the way it was intended to go, but most of them did. And this last one, of course, I think is a good example of that. We succeeded with that one.
Don, part of the Airport Authority, what they're trying to accomplish now is to bring the community involvement to the airport and bring the airport out into the public view as well. Any thoughts on how you could help achieve that?
When I first applied for the Airport Authority several years ago, the question was, will you please take care of the noise complaints that are coming into the supervisors? So this is a little bit different approach to it. I like being part of the overall community, and I would like to see, and always like to see, a good connection as opposed to an adversarial one. And I know that when I was on the Airport Authority last time, I would sit up there, and there were a number of complaints, noise complaints, and I actually took the time then to meet individually outside the meetings with those people that came in, and I'm pleased to say that some of those are friends still to this day. I will tell you right now, I didn't come in here with a plan of, gee, how are we going to integrate in a larger sense than we do. I don't have an opinion on that. I just attended the airport day. We've had several. They've all been pleasant. I don't know that I would see any opportunity to change that, and I don't really believe in throwing money at things like that either. So I think it really has to do with being proactive, being welcoming to the community, responding to their concerns if it's complaints, and reaching out in a positive way with things like the airport day. Much beyond that, I really haven't given thought to it at this point.
Don, my question for you is, what are your thoughts on commercial development adjacent to the airport and through the fence access?
My position is I approve of through the fence access. I realize that there's been developments in the FAA's rulings on that, and I may not be quite up to speed. When I came off the board last time, there had been some brand new rules, which I understand had been revised since then. But the airport, going, as I understand it, going back, was always integrated with the surrounding industrial area. It was intended to support businesses that are there. And I'm certain some businesses, I know ours did, use general aviation to support our business. I'm sure a lot of businesses don't, and we are just another element of that area for them out there. But I would say that to the extent it's allowed and supported by the FAA and by Title 19, through the fence is fine with me. I think it's a fine activity if it's managed well and you know, according to the regulations and guidelines that we all have. The rest of your question is, how do we support the industrial area?
No, you answered it. It was about what are your thoughts on commercial development adjacent to the airport and there through the fence access?
I think the commercial development have to be, again, consistent with both safety and the long-term goals. I was involved in one discussion several years ago. There was a desire to put a school off the end of the runway, and I was strongly against that. I have seen instances at airport that could have ended up in the middle of that school, so I oppose that on those reasons. Putting an industrial operation, a commercial operation, and not in what you might call the overrun areas, I'd be bold in favor of that. I'm not sure what the airport can do other, however, than providing a really effective airport for those companies that want to use it to support their business. We need to be sure the hours and the fuel and the terminal and these sorts of things are there to support them.
Thank you, Don. Is there anything else you want to add?
No.
Okay. All right. Again, thank you. City Manager Walt Sullivan, is he here?
No, ma'am. The other applicant was not able to attend. He did not pull his application, so obviously it's up. He did have valid reason why he couldn't make it. So it's up to the board on how you choose to handle his application. It's still an active application.
And then I think I'm going to ask Steve to address the manufacturer issue. Can you do that?
I can do that, but I was just going to update what Nick was just telling you. I did get a call from Walt Sullivan last night. He is back out of the hospital. He's got some medical issues going on, but he asked me to inform you that he was withdrawing his application. I should have shot that in sooner.
And Steve, could you just, because this is a manufacturer's position and Don is retired and one is an active manufacturer, how does that work within the realm of this position?
I've already had these discussions with the DA, and as I understand their analysis, which I agree with, is the statute says that you notice it for a manufacturer. If you're unable to appoint a manufacturer and as a result of that notice, then it becomes open to members of the general public. At the last month, you did. I mean, prior to that, you put it out for manufacturers. At the last month, you were unable to appoint one, and therefore the appointment at this point is not required to be a manufacturer. it's just required to be somebody representing the public. And in that respect, both of the candidates are qualified.
Thank you. I appreciate that clarification. All right, board. Thoughts? Go ahead.
Okay. I want to thank both the candidates. I think they can both do a fine job for us. I think that Mr. Peterson, though, brings a little more experience to the position that I think will meet the goals of the airport for the future. So for that reason, I'm going to vote for Mr. Peterson.
By my scoring system, I also have Don slightly ahead.
Jim?
I think it's a very tough decision. I think both are qualified, but I also will go with Mr. Peterson.
And I have to round out and say the same thing because by my scoring system, he qualified. So would someone like to make the motion?
I move to appoint Don Peterson to the Airport Authority to fill the manufacturer position for a partial term that expires October 2017.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Don Peterson is on the Airport Authority.
Thank you, Mr. Murdoch, too.
Missing the mayor. We're going to take a break for about 10 minutes.
going to call a meeting of the Board of Supervisors back to order. We're on item 25, non-action items. Board members, anything got any raise? Anybody? Supervisor Shirk, go.
My coffee. just a couple of things. First off, I want to thank staff for putting the names of individuals on the package and their email address. And even during today's meeting, we had a couple of instances where we were confused on page numbers and the agenda packets and answers. Thank you. From the IT department, in his email to me, it says it's on page 24 of the 70-page agenda item. Originally, page number still appears 1 through 5. In Lee Plemmel's response, he said, our policy is to print page numbers on packages, so I apologize for missing this one. During the discussion on 19B, we had a confusion on page numbers. Consideration, if you would please just put page numbers on our agenda, it would be great. Mayor mentioned earlier noise ordinance. I wanted to bring that up as well. Just recently, I took a tour of the BAC structure. Gina gave me a tour over there, and there's a lot of fix-its and improvements being made at the building. I know their contract is coming back to us in 6 months. I would like to know how much we're spending on maintenance and upkeep at the BAC structure before we renew their contract so that that can be part of the discussion, maybe for this board to look at how we're, you know, the floor and the second floor was redone. I don't know who's doing it. I'm guessing from our conversation with Gina, I didn't pinpoint her. It was coming from the city, so I was just checking on that. Also, if the staff or somebody could look at the downtown historic blue line, when I did talk with Gina over there, she mentioned the blue line. Maybe that's something, a project that we could look at improving on. I know it's really nice in the community, but the line itself needs some care and maintenance. Thank you.
Any other board comments?
Thank you.
Okay, the American Cancer Society Relay for Life kicks off at noon on July 11th. Everybody's invited. Should be there. Okay. All right. Anything else? Then we will entertain concluding public comment. Seeing none, I don't hear any, don't see any. Okay. Then we will adjourn the meeting unless there's an objection. We're adjourned.